All right, welcome back to the Crossover Cellist. I'm your host, Louis Patzner, and with me today is singer-songwriter, guitar player, let's see, what other titles should I give you? Chelsea Coleman. Concert organizer.
Yeah. Harmonizer on lots of...
Yeah, vocalist.
Singer stuff.
Singer-songwriter kind of encapsulates all of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks, Chelsea.
Thanks, Louis.
So, this is the podcast where I just interview people about our various musical projects. And we have a concert coming up at Euclid Manor on Friday, Saturday, the 23rd. And that's a pretty cool house concert. And, but first of all, so, where are you from, Chelsea?
Well, I was raised in Oklahoma, but
Tulsa.
So I usually tell people I'm from Tulsa, Oklahoma, but I was actually born in California.
Oh, right.
Which a lot of people don't know about me.
What part of California?
San Jose. But I
South
moved
Bay.
Away when I was very little. But I've always had extended family around here. And, like, my great-grandpa built a cabin in the Santa Cruz Mountains. And, like, I've always had family here. So landing here in my 20s felt really, really good.
You still go to that cabin every once in a while, right?
I do. It's the best. It's great. I'm working on a recording project that I'm doing there.
Oh, you were going to record at the cabin?
Yeah, I've been recording at the cabin, and it's a slow process to get all the songs in order and get it all together.
Sure.
Because I'm also a working mom.
Yeah.
Doing all this.
You're the mother of my nephew, Otis, who is in the other room learning raps about dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And there's robots in there somehow too?
I think so. Story bots. They're robots that tell stories and sing songs.
Is there time travel involved?
Probably.
It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I don't know.
So you kind of grew up in, do you call that the Midwest?
I don't know what to call it. Tulsa feels pretty Midwesty.
Yeah.
It's like at the intersection of like the South.
Yeah.
Texas and Midwest.
Because it's just
which
above,
are all very different vibes. So it has a little bit of flavor from each. But it's kind of like right on in line with like Omaha and Kansas City, St. Louis. It's like
it's very central.
Yeah.
And then when did you move out here?
I moved out here when I was 25.
Uh-huh.
8 years ago? 7 years ago?
Yeah.
And, I was visiting my mom and grandpa out in Walnut Creek.
Yeah.
And I went to a Starry Plow open mic.
Yeah.
And I met the Song Preservation Society guys.
Sure.
And I just, like, had this moment of, like, oh, here's my spot.
Yeah, for sure.
Here's my people. Here we go. I'm going to move here. And I moved here a few months later.
And were you singing at that open mic?
Yeah.
You did a song?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really nice event. It's still going on.
Yeah. It's a really great way to plug into the Bay Area music scene. You know, like I just started there. I went every week and then people started offering me gigs and I just like built up from there, you know?
Right.
Just branched out and, you know, your brother was going there a lot at the time too. And
yeah. My brother, Graham.
Graham Patzner.
And then that you met people from the infamous Prince Street House.
Prince Street House.
Which is no longer a thing, but
I met Ariel Wang on my very first night in town.
I know her. Did she live there yet?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she lived there. I met her. I moved here. I went to the Starry Plow the first night I moved here, and that's when I met her and Madeline.
Ah, yeah.
Tesca.
Cool. Well, yeah. Okay, so since you've been in town, you made a few records, right?
Yeah.
I've been recording. I feel like the recording projects I've done with you have always been at Bird and Egg Studios.
Uh-huh.
How many records have you done there?
One.
Oh, okay.
It all ended up being gathered into one Chelsea Coleman record.
The reunion
because
stuff.
Because we did, yeah, there were like these like constellations of groups that like happened kind of briefly. So we had reunion, and we started recording all of our songs at Bird and Egg at the same time as Graham and I had the Gospel Flats, and we were recording some of our stuff at Bird and Egg.
Yeah,
and
right.
Then everything kind of disbanded, and I was like, hey, these tracks are awesome. I'm going to turn this into a cohesive record. And,
you know,
I still play with all those people here and there, but...
Of course. Yeah. Like, we were all playing together. Euclid Manor. What was it? February?
Yeah. Yeah, that was February.
For one of Graham's sets.
Yeah.
That
was pretty cool.
And then I was like, damn, this is a really cool spot.
Yeah.
And then we talked about doing this show together. So, okay, if people want to listen to your music, how do they do it?
Two main ways. One of the best ways is through Bandcamp. Because if you download my album through Bandcamp, I get most of the money.
Yeah,
which
right.
is pretty cool. Bandcamp is a really artist supportive platform.
Yeah.
So chelseacoleman.bandcamp.com. My record that is the one that I've just been talking about, Modern Mythology, is on there. And you'll find some of my older stuff too, including a Christmas album that I made with Madeline Tesca.
Oh yeah.
And then Graham and I made a Gospel Flats album, like an acoustic album, that's at thegospelflats.bandcamp.com.
I see.
So that you have to find separately. That's just like a secret piece of history that most people don't know about, but it's there and it's...
We'll put it on the description
really cool.
of the podcast.
Other place
yes.
Is on YouTube. So or Facebook. Because every year in December, I don't have enough time or money to make enough records for all the songs that I write.
Yeah, sure.
And so 3 years ago, I was just like, screw trying to do this perfectly. I'm just going to blast out a bunch of iPhone videos of all these songs that I want to share with people, because it just felt silly to be holding them all in, and I wanted to get them out to whoever might want to hear them. And so I started this thing called December Creative Flurry, and I just pump out videos all month. And then those all land on my YouTube channel, which is C. Coleman Music. Like, the letter C, and then my last name, Coleman Music. Yeah. And there's 32 or maybe 35 songs that way. If you want to do a Chelsea Coleman deep dive.
Yeah, which I recommend.
You can go to YouTube.
So you're playing this house show on Saturday.
I'll be playing piano on a few songs,
which
I barely ever do.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen you do that.
I used to play piano a lot. It was my first instrument, and through a series of all sorts of things. I'm singing a song about it that you're playing cello on. No One's Gonna Take the Music Away.
Yeah.
I had someone in my life in my early 20s who tried to get me to stop playing music. And he did kind of succeed at getting me to stop playing piano. But
how'd that work out for him?
Not great. I divorced him when I was 23.
Yeah.
Started at 19 like a good Oklahoman.
I was talking to Ariel about this.
Uh-huh.
And Ariel's like, oh, yeah, that's... That she's got stories.
Got some stories.
Yeah.
But yeah, I it took a long time to get back to the piano because like I used to be really good at it and at like composing and improvising, and I would take anything I could imagine in my head, I could just do
right
on the piano. And then, you know, returning to it after like what, like 10 years,
mm-hmm.
it's like, you know, just like fumbling around trying to make the music that I hear in my head, and it's very frustrating, but I've been doing it anyway.
Yeah.
Trying to build up my chops a little bit. So I'll be playing some. I finally started writing songs on piano again, so I'll be playing some songs.
Yeah.
On the beautiful grand piano that they have.
Oh yeah, they have a nice piano there.
Mm-hmm.
I find piano to be a good writing tool. I'm not good enough to perform on it or to play anything through, but I think it's really useful. You know, it's all laid
so
out
useful.
There.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. I know my guitar chords pretty darn well now, but still. Sometimes I'll hear a chord in my head and I just won't be able to find it. So I'll go to the piano and find it there and then translate it back to guitar. And harmonies too.
Yeah.
Like way easier to pick out harmonies on a piano than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I feel like I've seen you play at a variety of places, but my favorite times are always these house shows. Especially like you played at our house.
Yeah.
A while ago, and it was so special. But I also saw you play at the Stork Club.
Yeah.
And
oh my gosh. So the one of the people, the other person who's sharing the bill with me at Euclid Manor is Brandon Decker. And I met him at the Stork Club 7 years ago, sharing a bill with him there when he was touring through.
Oh, yeah. Decker. So, I keep hearing about
Decker.
This guy. We probably know
good.
Each other.
You probably met him. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep track of all these musicians.
Yeah, so... and let's see. I saw you play at Octopus Literary Salon recently. Do you have, like, favorite venues to play?
Oh, definitely. I mean, Octopus Literary Salon, Amnesia.
Oh, sure.
And The Lost Church.
Yeah, Lost Church is great.
And, I mean, my old favorite venue was Viracocha.
Oh, wow. That takes me back.
Yeah.
Yeah, Viracocha was a really cool kind of speakeasy basement venue.
That was a very special little chapter of my music history.
Yeah. Did you guys do You're Gonna Die there?
Yeah, that's where You're Gonna Die was for a long time.
So could you talk about that?
Yeah. So I help run a organization called You're Going to Die. It's a show series that has been going on for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I found it in 2012 after my grandpa died. And I was like looking for an outlet to like play heavier songs that I'd written about that process.
Mm-hmm.
And... it's a open mic. I mean, the main way that we do the shows is an open mic where people talk about, you know, like tell stories, sing songs, poetry, etc. That relates to death, grief, loss, and like our own mortality. And then there's also a flavor of like, well, you're going to die someday. Why don't you go up and perform that crazy thing that you're scared to perform, even if it's not on the death theme, you know? Because when you start thinking about it, everything is related to mortality.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. So it's very expansive. And now we, I helped turn it into a nonprofit a couple years ago, and now we have, we're doing more shows. We started an Oakland show at the Starline Social Club. That one is going to happen on March 27th,
nice.
Wednesday. And
Starline upstairs?
This one's going to be in the side room, the newly remodeled side room of the Starline.
Yes.
We had a big one in the upstairs ballroom in January that sold out, and it was awesome.
Nice.
And then we're going to be having the Oakland open mics once a month downstairs. And we also have like a prison program called Alive Inside and a hospice songwriter partnership program called Songs for Life. And we're working on a podcast and a few other amazing things.
Yeah, sweet.
In the works. So that's a really cool thing to be a part of. It's like a different, it's like a totally different way of doing shows and getting art out there. It's like a different kind of channel, you know?
Yeah.
Where I like it because so many of my songs are very like, emotional and very vulnerable. And like, I sometimes, it doesn't feel good to just like throw that at people who don't know what they're getting into.
Right.
So if you have a show called You're Going to Die, I know that everybody who shows up is like at least, you know, like has consented to some amount of being confronted by emotional material.
Yeah.
And that feels good to me. I'm like, okay, you guys signed up for it. I'm going to go there and you can leave if you don't like it, you know?
Yeah.
But most people really like they show up to be moved.
Yeah.
You know, like they don't show up just to be entertained, which is
for sure
a big distinction that's very helpful to have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although entertainment's great. I love entertainment, but
it's
kind of different.
You know, I think to me that kind of music can be very entertaining, but it's not like we're going on a roller coaster or, you know, jumping in the pool.
Yeah.
I think it's
not disco.
No, very much not disco. Yeah, your songs get real.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's like, it makes a lot of sense, you know, that you've kind of like become more and more involved in this.
Yeah, that's why like house concerts are great too, because there's like house concerts and listening rooms, like the Lost Church, where like people show up for the experience
and
for the music. You know, it's not like, you know, I mean, I like playing bar shows still. It's fun, but like it's a totally different kind of thing when people show up to like hang out with their friends and drink some beers and the music is in the background and it's like, fine. But,
well, it's just,
you know, it's different.
I feel like it's hard for, you know, lone singer-songwriter woman to play the Stork Club, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or just, you know, I love the Stork Club, but like that atmosphere.
Totally.
You know, it's a huge, like, mountain to climb, I would say.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's why I feel like my absolute favorite time I've seen you play was at my house.
Yeah.
Where we had these loud bands play. We didn't realize they were going to be that loud. But
what did your neighbors think?
You know, they were all fine. We were so lucky.
Great.
Our upstairs neighbors were like, and they're the landlords, they were like, well, we were wondering if the cops were going to come. And they didn't. So great. We're so,
whoa,
so lucky.
That's amazing.
But that was like, we had, we've switched our bedroom and music room now. So the bedroom is the big room that was where we had that show. And I remember you were just like, what do I do now? Because you played last. And instead of playing in that room, you played on the couch, and everybody sat down, and there was this huge couch, and you were the only person on it, and it ended up being, like, super special. Also, I remember enjoying the Stork Club set, which I think was the first time I saw you years ago, but I feel like you've honed your craft super hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was really, really, you know, to me, that's one of my favorite kinds of entertainment. You know what I mean? So maybe not what, you know, is the classic definition of entertainment, but I was entertained in more. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Ooh, entertainment plus.
Yeah.
Entertainment plus.
That's your genre.
Emotional healing.
But I think also maybe I just like that kind of stuff. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe that's just me.
I think a lot of people like that. I mean, I think there's a trend toward, you know, carving out more spaces for that kind of, for this kind of music.
Yeah, and I think maybe there's something to be said for, you know, preparing your audience letting them know kind of what it's going to be.
Yeah.
Because if you're expecting a dance show and you show up and it's a You're Gonna Die show, then you maybe would just be, you know, it's like feeling like inappropriately dressed for an event, you know, yeah, what I mean? But on the inside.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, so let's talk other... Do you have other shows? We have March 23rd, March 27th.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay, so March 23rd at Euclid Manor.
Yeah, that's Oakland, like Adams Point area.
Yes. And that'll be real heavy on all my songs.
Right.
And Decker.
And Decker.
Brandon Decker.
Yeah.
And I sing with him, too. So I'll be singing harmony with
Very
him.
Very nice.
And
does he play first?
You know, we haven't figured out how we're going to do it yet.
Okay. Well, Ariel said I can... Ariel's recording that day.
Uh-huh.
She said I can leave whenever I need to.
Okay, great.
So,
okay.
Don't
stress about it.
Yeah, don't stress.
Okay, great. And then, yeah, You're Going to Die at the Starline Social Club on March 27th. And then April 17th at Octopus Literary Salon.
Lovely.
With Late for the Train, an amazing Americana and bluegrass duo.
Did you guys play there together?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Also, Octopus, months ago?
Yes.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah. And other things further down the road, you know. Oh, I get to open for Morgan James at the Catalyst in Santa Cruz this Sunday. So if anybody's down in Santa Cruz...
Oh, and you're doing a show on Friday.
And I'm doing... I do a lot of... I participate in a lot of other projects as I can, able to. So on Friday, my friend Jamie is putting on a... He's reciting a big chunk of the Odyssey and has invited a bunch of his friends to play music throughout the recitation at specific moments that have to do with the storyline, and it's so cool. I did it last year with him, and it's just, I didn't know what to expect last year, and I was just like, sure, that sounds weird and awesome, okay. And it's really well done. It's really cool.
And
so I get to go play a couple songs as a part of that at the Lost Church.
Is he like making his way through the whole Odyssey, or does he just do select passages or chapters?
It's select books. I mean, this one is like mostly book 17 and 18.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
He's not doing like a complete The Odyssey project.
It's not a complete project.
Because that would
it's
be
not,
like over the top.
That would be over the top. Last year, I think it was like from books 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how he decides which ones to do, but...
Yeah.
And on this Wednesday night...
Oh, my God.
On the 20th, tomorrow night, I'm singing harmony with Brian Belknap at the Knockout.
Oh, my God.
So that's fun. I've known him for many years, and he just invited me to sing with him, which is fun. Similar with Brandon. I've known him for many, many years, and just started singing with him a few months ago, which was...
You're so busy really playing music.
I am. I just love doing it.
That's great. I'm so glad that you are doing it. Because I know, you know, being single mom is a time-consuming thing just in its own thing.
Yeah. Being a mom is a lot of work, and it's awesome, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
And luckily, Otis lets me play music now.
Yeah. He was not thrilled with it for a phase of his life.
Yeah, for like the first 3 years. I would think, oh, he's asleep in the other room. It's 11 p.m. I can go practice some songs.
Yeah.
He would overhear just the slightest bit of me playing and wake up and just scream, "Mommy, don't sing!" Which is definitely not what I expected from motherhood at all. I thought, like, oh, my baby's going to be like, Mommy, sing me a lullaby. but, like, I think he knows that it's the thing that...
It's really important.
...takes me away from him when I'm away from him.
Oh, you know?
Think he knows that it's, like, the main other...
Like, yeah.
...love of my life.
Right.
You know? And, yeah, definitely, like, he would, like... When I was holding my guitar, he would try to take it out of my hands, and it felt like, oh, like he knows that it's my other baby, you know?
Right.
Like, he knows that it's, like, the other thing I care about almost as much as I care about him, you know?
Right.
And, but now he like, likes it when I teach him songs.
Yeah,
and
nice.
He asks me all sorts of random questions about the words of my songs, and I... tell him the truth some of the time.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he has some, like, he wants my attention still, so he'll come and interrupt me while I'm practicing, but he doesn't mind me play, you know, he likes it when I play music now.
Yeah.
So, but he'll still, you know, he likes it, but he'll still come up and be like, Mommy, I need this right now!
You know? Right.
So he's learning how to, you know,
well, he's
be
four.
Patient. Yeah, he's four. So he's doing great, considering. but he is learning how to, you know.
And he comes to your shows
how
sometimes.
To be patient with it. Yeah.
Yeah, which
he
is
He comes
nice.
Out to a lot of shows now. And, yeah, I remember the first time, you know, because I'd bring him to shows a lot and just kind of put up with him yelling at random moments throughout my sets. And I remember the first time I was at a secret open mic in Bodega,
mm-hmm.
and I went up to the front, was sitting on a piano bench, and he came up and sat next to me, and he just stood mm-hmm. there looking at me, like, totally silent the whole time I was playing a song, and he was, like, 3 and a half.
Yeah.
And I was like,
oh, he's starting to get it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like, there was this, like, he had definitely never done that before, and I was like, oh, my God.
Well, because
everything's gonna change,
yeah.
you know? Like
everyone else is doing that, right?
Yeah. And yeah, and I think as he's learning that it's something that he gets to participate in and not, you know, because it's transitioning from the thing that takes me away from him into the thing that he gets to participate in with me.
Yeah.
And he gets to sing along and he gets to come to a lot of shows and, like, feel like he's a part of it instead of feeling like, why do you sing instead of playing with me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember we were at a jam session at my, you know, my family's house.
Yeah.
And you were playing, and then he was just, like, right in front of you being like, Mommy, no, don't!
Yeah, he would, like, put his hands over my mouth and everything. And then
you were like,
it.
But this is what makes me happy. And then I think we took him out of the room or something. So anyway, I'm so happy that, that... he's made progress, and it's great to see you so busy playing music, you know?
Yeah.
Because I know it's probably good for your soul.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it was hard to... When he was, like, 2 years old... Well, when he was a baby, it was... Easy is not the right word for it, but, like, I could take him anywhere with me. I would just go... You know, I performed a ton...
Sure.
Between when he was born and when he was, like, a year and a half.
Yeah.
Because I could just take him anywhere. He'd fall asleep. I'd put the little headphones on him. He'd be in the wrap. I was
right.
on stage with him
yeah,
in the wrap
remember.
Tons of times, which was so much fun to be able to do that. But then once he was, like, a toddler.
Once he could talk.
It was,
yeah.
you know.
And
I was like, okay,
thoughts.
You have to, like, be at home at bedtime. Fine. Okay.
I was part of his first ever show. Do you remember this? At the Musical Offering?
Yeah!
Cafe. You and Graham played, and I played with you guys. And I specifically remember you playing with him in, what it was, I guess, the rap, right?
Yeah.
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 And I was so proud.
That was fun.
you know, to have, to be part of his first public, musical experience. And I think I also gave him his first piano lesson when he was super small. I sat him on my lap in front of the piano, and I took his finger, and I pushed his finger down on the key, and then he did it himself. So I think that counts as a piano lesson.
That counts.
If I can just brag a little bit.
That definitely counts.
Okay.
And then you'll teach him cello soon enough, or whatever you
well,
teach him.
Well, I'm happy to teach him whatever, but... well, listen, we don't want to get into all of the plans I have for his musical education on the podcast.
There's some...
It's probably not a good look for me.
Yeah. There might be some family drama around the instrument to start with. We'll have to have a family meeting.
Don't you think piano is good?
No, I think piano to start, yeah. Well, he already has a drum set, too.
Right, right. He says he plays the drums. Well, he goes back and forth.
Yeah.
But between saying he doesn't play anything, right?
He usually says all the things he plays now, which
oh,
is
really?
Drums and ukulele and piano and accordion and
yeah.
flute and what else does he play? Harmonica.
Yeah. Does he count his voice as an instrument?
Oh, not yet. I'll have
good,
to teach him that. Yeah.
I remember.
I'll have to teach him that, like, your voice is an instrument. We haven't talked about that being.
It's the best instrument.
Yeah.
I remember Grandma singing the Octonauts show, Octonauts theme song. Octonauts is a TV show that he likes.
Mm-hmm.
And Graham sang it wrong.
Oh.
And Otis was like, it's not like that. It goes like this. And then he sang it.
He is a little perfectionist about music, which is funny. I was teaching him This Land Is Your Land, and I couldn't remember. I was, like, teaching him, like, the fourth verse, you know, and I didn't remember the fourth verse, so I was, like, making part of it up. And then I sang it differently the second time I sang through it, and he was like, no, it's this, you know. And I was like, okay.
I
had no idea that he would catch it, you know.
Time to get this kid some jazz lessons.
Yeah.
Okay, well... let's see. So we've done the calendar,
uh-huh.
talked about where to find your music. Bandcamp mm-hmm. is the best way.
Mm-hmm. I'm also on, you know, I'm on Tidal and Spotify and like Amazon or whatever. And,
we're really probably the
iTunes,
best,
you know, I'm on all the things, but,
go to a show and pick up the music there.
Yeah.
Any other projects that you want to talk about?
I just have this very lengthy, very thorough, tons and tons of songs recording project that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out what the next steps are for it, because I just have so many songs.
Yeah.
And I'm, like, starting to see the vision for how all of it's going to come together. But there's, like, at least 50 songs that are going to get...
Amazing.
That are... Most of them have been recorded, and I just need to add tracks to them and then, you know, mix and all that. But I'm going to have a songbook, and working on, like, stories about each song.
What does songbook mean?
Songbook. It's going to have the lyrics and the chords.
Oh, yeah.
So
great.
Anybody can learn the songs.
That's awesome.
Because I know it's fun for people to learn songs that somebody they know wrote. I like it.
Totally.
And, yeah, when I was 13 and first learning how to play guitar and whatnot, like, I just got the songbooks for all my favorite musicians and just started learning songs, and it was really fun. And so, yeah, I like, I care a lot about accessibility
mm-hmm.
to the songs
so
that anybody who might, cause, like, you know, I write my songs, I share really vulnerable stories about my life for, like, the possibility that it would be healing and helpful for somebody else.
Sure.
In addition to trying to present it beautifully, because, like, of course, the delivery matters. And, like, I like using my voice and coming up with chords that sound beautiful together and all that. But, like, the message and the story is, like, the main reason why I do it.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I really want anybody who might benefit from the songs to be able to find it and listen to it and learn it if that's fun for them, and, like, read a story about it, because I have a lot of, you know, I've done a lot of writing about the various songs, so I'm, like, in a slow process of putting all of it together.
Yeah.
And that's in the works. It's called the Verdigris Anthology.
Verdigris. What does that mean?
Verdigris, it means two things. It means two different things to me. It's the color of the patina that forms over copper.
Oh, okay.
That, like, blue-green color.
Yeah.
And so, it's the name of that color.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the name of a river that I grew up near in Oklahoma.
I see.
And has, like, personal significance to me and my, family and my sister. And one of my sisters. And it's, like, there's a song called Verdigris, and that's going to be on there. And it's, I chose that word because it's, like, the passage of time over decades and, like, the jadedness that is also beautiful, like the patina that forms over this copper metal over a long period of time, that's like part of what makes it beautiful. And this river that is like a symbol for me of just like letting go and just like letting the river roll on. And,
lovely.
And that's like what the whole anthology is about.
I think it's brilliant. I keep on telling myself I'm going to, like, you know, self-publish a lot of my music, and I haven't quite done it yet, but it's on the to-do list. But I think
it's hard to, like, motivate and plan. It's like, you know.
Yeah, and be like, oh, okay, this is the final version, right?
Yeah. Oh,
because,
definitely.
Like, let's say, like, for my string quartet music, you know, there's a lot of stuff that my quartet has written in, and do I want to include that or not? And I have to make these decisions. It's sort of hard to get myself to do it. But so the fact that you're doing it is inspiring to me. Cool. Awesome.
Cool.
So, yeah, sorry. I'm like sleep deprived and on the brink of illness. I feel like we got a little bit of a slow start on the podcast. Or I was a little bit like, I'm a little bit mopey today, but thank you for doing this.
Yeah.
So we're gonna hear a song.
Yeah. How about the first song on this album? This album is called Modern Mythology.
Is this your most recent?
Yeah, I released it at the end of 2017. And the Pastner family is all over this album. Lewis plays cello on a few songs and trombone on a few other songs. And
we got my dad.
Their dad plays trombone, bass trombone. And Graham Pastner plays a million instruments. And produced a few of the songs and sings on it too. And this song is called This Thunder. And it's one that I wrote when I was 23. And a lot of songs I wrote during that time, I kind of like revisit and I'm like, oh, that's a cool story about that time in my life.
Yeah.
Totally not applicable to me anymore, but glad I documented it, you know, and have a song for it. This one, it just, like, keeps, every time I sing it or hear it, I'm just like, yep, still important, you know? Like, applicable, like, at any point in my life. I'm just like, oh, yeah. Which is kind of cool to have a song that feels kind of timeless for my own process, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Well, thanks for being on the podcast. And yeah, this song, This Thunder, is coming up. And remember, it's not celloist, it's cellist!
Cellist!
I all my fears and all my faults. I'm jumping in, ready now, baggage and all. And all my ears and all my wants, singing loud and clear from the tip of my tongue to the top of my lungs. And all my wishing wells ran dry. All this wondering why. And all these tears and all these calls, I'm rambling on, standing up tall and pacing the halls. And all these rights and wrongs don't play along. And all these plans I've made move on. But if I or the settling dust, if I think hard enough, strong enough, then I won't fall in love and I won't blush. Just thunder rolls over me, it rumbles and rattles till I sing. These bones are buffed till I'm clean enough. And all these years I've known I'm just alone. And all these hands I hold can't carry me along. If I'm good enough, smart enough, then I'll never be broken by the bone. I'll stretch tight and I'll hold. If I think hard enough, strong enough, then I won't have to feel nothing at all.